You know, we live in a troubled world. There's trouble everywhere we turn. There's a depressed economy, a polarized government, a health care debacle, international unrest, and so many of you are facing a personal crisis, a serious illness, the death of a loved one, a financial emergency, some issue within your family. And how should we respond? How should we respond to times of trouble and crisis? With lament? With resignation? With panic or anger? I want to suggest to you that one of the most powerful responses to any situation of life, even in the time of crisis, is thanksgiving. In the story that Linda read for us a few moments ago, the gospel story from the 17th chapter of Luke, there are a group of lepers, 10 lepers. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem and he runs into this group of lepers, the ones who were outcast, who were ostracized, despised, unclean. One of the interesting things that we immediately learn about this group is composed of both Jews and Samaritans, two identities that normally divide people. But you see, their mutual pain, their shared misery was so great that they were united by their common suffering. Their unity in suffering was much greater than the disunity of racial prejudice. And so here they were. And they kept their distance. They knew how to keep their distance. They always kept their distance. And when they saw Jesus, they cried out. They pled for mercy. Jesus, have mercy on us. Now, the first thing we notice is this. Jesus does not respond immediately. They asked for mercy. He gave them marching orders. He gave them a command. He said, go and show yourselves to the priest, because the priests were the only ones who could declare them clean. And the fact that they had been healed of their leprosy. But at this point, the thing you have to remember was at this point they had not been healed. But one of the most amazing things is, even though they had not been healed, they acted on the word of Jesus. They took Jesus at his word, and they responded not to the miracle, but to his word, his command. And only when they started to go to the priest did they experience healing. And then one leper, there were 10, but there was one guy that I guess when he realized that he had been healed, he stops, he backtracks, he goes back to Jesus, and he falls on his knees, and he says, thank you. He gives thanks. Now, a couple of things we need to remember. The other 9 did nothing wrong. In fact, they were doing exactly what Jesus told them to do. They were on their way to the priest. You see, thanksgiving is not required. But for the one who did reverse course, who did turn back, he received something more. He received a second blessing. Because he not only was able to experience the blessing of healing, but did you hear the words that Linda read, what Jesus said to him? He said, go, your faith has made you well. Your faith has made you whole. Actually, the word that he used is salvation. Your faith has saved you. He receives a double blessing. A second blessing comes from two things. Number one, it is recognizing the blessings that we have all around us and calling them by name. Whether it's mom and dad and pizza, or health and love and family. Remember that old song, "Count Your Many Blessings"? Name them one by one. So a second blessing begins, number one, just recognizing blessings when we see them, calling them by name, and then saying thank you. Just giving thanks for what we have. When you affirm someone, when you say thank you, when you give thanks, it is a powerful experience. Now, we all know this is Thanksgiving week. And on Thanksgiving week, families gather. But we also know, psychologists tell this all the time, the holidays are some of the most stressful times of the year. And part of that stress comes when families gather. Because what happens when families gather? You see, all families have little issues and there's underlying tension and things like that. And maybe it's going to work this way at your house. Maybe everybody's supposed to bring a dish. Is that what you do? So everybody has an assignment. Everybody has a dish that they bring. But there's always that sister-in-law. You know, the one who brings the green Jell-O? I know. You have one, don't you? And they always come late. And what does everybody do? Everybody stands around and, well, you know what she's going to bring, don't you? Yeah, here she comes. I told you she'd be late. Yep, there it is, green Jell-O. Wait a minute, she put a little oranges in it this time, those mandarin oranges. Now, think about that for a minute. Here you are, having a feast. There's all this wonderful turkey and dressing and vegetables and casseroles and all that good stuff. And everybody's focused on the green Jell-O. That's the way life is. You see, rather than focusing on the goodness and the bounty and the blessings, we tend to focus on the negative. What if this happened at your house on Thursday? What if after everybody, say in the middle of the meal, after you've already had the mandatory blessing and all of that, that somebody stands up and they raise a glass and they say, I just want to take a minute to say thank you. To say thank you for every member of this family, for coming together, because our gathering is a sacred gathering. And every person in this family is a gift. And for all this food and for the fellowship, we are truly blessed. And you raise a glass and propose a toast of thanksgiving. Suddenly, you would receive a second blessing. It's all how you look at life. Because there are a lot of people who look at life and all they see is trouble. All they see are the problems. All they focus on is the green Jell-O. But there are other people who look at life and they see goodness and they see blessing and they see God's grace. Let me share something personal with you. It was a number of years ago, in fact, it was back when I was in my 30s, I found out that I had high blood pressure. And I was going to have to start taking blood pressure medicine. That was not a happy day. Vic, Dr. Tom Long is the one who told me, said, Ray, you need to start taking this medicine to control your blood pressure. Well, I went home, and Joyce can tell you, I wasn't a happy camper. I said, I'm not old enough. I said, old people take medicine. Not young people. I'm not old enough to have to start doing this. And I fussed, and I fumed, and I was depressed, and I pouted. And I said, I'm going to have to take this blood pressure. I'm going to lick this. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to get in shape. I'm not going to take this blood pressure. Well, I finally come to the point that when you get as old as I am, you just take it every day and you don't worry about it. The only prescription medicine I take is my blood pressure. That's all I take in the morning with some supplements, and that's it. And I had come to the point that it was neither good nor bad. And then 3 years ago, on the first Sunday of December, we had celebrated the second Sunday of Advent here in the sanctuary. We had the Chrismon tree, the Advent wreath, the beautiful music. It was a wonderful service. We were going to the Civic Center that afternoon for the Christmas candlelight. And when I went back into my office, my phone was blinking. My youngest brother had left me a message that our brother Robert, who was 2.5 years younger than I, was rushed to the hospital. That was early on a Sunday morning. They airlifted him to the hospital in Huntsville, and then later to the hospital in Vanderbilt, in Nashville. 24 hours later, he was dead. And you know what we found out? My brother never went to the doctor. Since he was a child, he had never seen a doctor. He had never had his blood pressure taken. There's no doubt that what killed him was the fact that he had untreated high blood pressure. And you see, if he had simply gone to the doctor and started taking that pill in the morning, he would be here today. And so you know what I do now when I take that blood pressure pill every morning? I say thank you. Thank you to the good doctors. Thank you that God has blessed us with medicine so that we can live a normal life. It's all how you look at things. It's all a matter of perspective. Dr. Harold Kushner wrote that gratitude is the fundamental religious emotion. It's simply living a life of gratitude. It's more than remembering to mumble thank you when somebody does something kind for you. It's more than an obligation, more than a ritual of politeness. Gratitude is a way of looking at the world that doesn't change the facts of life, but it puts the facts of life in a different perspective so that we can enjoy life and understand the fundamental truth that life itself is a gift from God. And when we understand that life is a gift, that we have been blessed, that we have received this wonderful gift, then we're going to live a life in which we say thank you. And part of the way that we give thanks is we give back, is we support children who don't have a normal home through the Baptist Children's Homes. We come down here and pick up one of these angels, and we go to the store and we purchase a sweater and some shoes and a baby doll for a child who otherwise wouldn't have anything for Christmas. That's how you live a life of gratitude. It is by saying thank you and by giving thanks by the way that we live. All of us who have a preschooler, either as a grandbaby or a baby, probably have some wonderful pictures on our refrigerators. Now, they wouldn't make it into the Metropolitan Gallery of Art in New York, but we would never replace them, would we? Because Dr. Kushner said the essence of a gift is that it comes from someone else. You see, a gift is not something I do. I don't deserve it necessarily. It's something somebody does for me. And so when one of our grandchildren come up to us and give us a little picture they've colored in preschool, it becomes a representation of their love and the fact that they gave me that gift. And so it's not the gift itself. It's what the gift represents. Now, I am getting kind of old, and I want you young people to know that it was 40 years ago this coming summer that I was a youth minister for the very first time. And that's why I have to take pills now in the morning. But in the summer of 1974, I went to L.A., Lower Alabama, to the First Baptist Church of Greenville, Alabama. I was their youth minister. And that was a magical summer. I went down there with my old 62 Chevrolet that had all kind of issues. And we had the best summer working with those kids. You know how many young people you can get in a 62 Chevrolet Bel Air? More than the law allows. And more than I can count. But we rode all over town. We had wonderful fellowships. We did a lot of ministry. We had a lot of fun. We had Bible studies. We had vacation Bible school. We had backyard Bible clubs. And for one magical summer, I connected with the most wonderful group of young people, all who are grown and have grandchildren of their own now. It was the last day of the summer, and I was getting ready to go back to school. And I was in my old 62 Chevrolet Bel Air in the parking lot of First Baptist Church, and I had boxes and bags, and it was all packed ready to go. And all these kids came. And you know how it is when you're saying goodbye, especially to young people. We stood there, we cried, we just didn't want to say goodbye. I bet there were three or four times I got in the car and said, I have to go, and then I got back out. But finally, I said, look, I got to get out of here. So I got into the car, I started to leave, and one of the boys said, wait just a minute. And he ran into the church, and he came back with a butcher knife. And I thought, I don't know if this is going to be good or not. And he said, hold on just a minute. And he got down under my car in the back. And then a minute later, he said, okay, go, go, go. And I wondered what he did. I found out later. You see, my car had a lot of issues. I mean, you could look through the floor and see the street. The muffler was corroded. The tailpipe was just hanging by a strap. I found out later he cut off the end of that tailpipe that was just hanging by a strap. A few weeks later, I went back. They had a big picnic out at the lake. And then the kids said, come here, Ray. I said, we have a presentation to make. And they handed me this. That was the old tailpipe. See, it was hanging from that strap just like that. They had painted it gold, and they put a plaque on it. And this is what it says. The Order of the Golden Tailpipe. It honors Ray N. Howell III with this golden tailpipe for distinguished service in the First Baptist Church of Greenville, Alabama, September the 14th, 1974. This is one of my most prized possessions. Not because I like having an old tailpipe, but because what this represents. And when we understand the essence of a gift, when we understand that God has given us the gift of life, then how should we respond? I've asked Tracy if she would sing for us one more time, "Amazing Grace, How Sweet the Sound." Should we respond to that amazing grace with hearts of gratitude and acts of love? The same love that Rachel was talking about last Sunday, a love that gives, a love that is eternal. This morning, as we come to the final hymn, I hope that all of us would have a recommitment of faith, that we would commit our lives to the Lord Jesus Christ, who has given so much to us, and we would respond with acts of love and kindness.